talks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal, come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Must be an animal, come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is Anthony Bellotti, the founder of the White Coast Waste Project, which aims to halt federally funded research involving animals. Not primarily driven by animal rights concerns so much as what it considers the wasteful government spending, taxpayers' money that bankrolls this research. Moreover, they believe this problem is exacerbated by being so sprawling that it's nearly impossible to determine exactly how much taxpayer money is spent on animal experiments each year, who's spending it, or how many animals are used and killed in the course of this research. That said, the White Coast Waste Project estimates the total amount spent on this research is upwards of 12 to 15 billion tax dollars each year. We'll find out more about the White Coast Waste Project, its history, its mission, its current concerns, and more when I speak with Anthony Bellotti in just a few moments here on Talking Animals. Later, I'll speak briefly with Ken Koenig of Dunedin Doggy Rescue, which is located, not surprisingly, in Dunedin. But their impact on dogs with dark stories and ticking clocks extends well beyond Dunedin. We'll get caught up on them and some events they are hosting in the coming days. Lastly, we're about 2 weeks away from the WMNF Summer Fun Drive, which starts June 1st. Once again, I've been asked to raise $3,000 in less than an hour. Yikes! So I hope you'll consider making an early pledge or donating via the Talking Animals tip jar. The link for that you'll find on the Talking Animals radio show Facebook page and on my personal Facebook page. I just put those up moments ago. And as usual, I'll be offering some exclusive thank you gifts for pledges of various levels, including amazing tickets to see Paul McCartney in Tampa, a brand new Talking Animals t-shirt. I'll be unveiling the new design soon. I know everybody's giddy with the anticipation on that. Also, of course, we'll be offering the week-long stay at the condominium on the Hawaiian island of Kauai. So email me at dj@wmnf.org if you're interested in details on those or others, and I'll get back to you right after the show. Right now, though, let's get to Anthony and the White Coast Waste Project with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Anthony Bellotti to Talking Animals. Good morning, Anthony.
Good morning. Thank you for having us. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals, and from West Coast at the moment, unusually, so bright and early out there, so thanks all the more for joining us. And so the White Coast Waste Project is driven by a distinctive set of objections when it comes to animal testing, especially relative to other conversations I've had on this show, as you might imagine, over the years, about animal experimentation. So we'll explore the White Coast Waste Project in some detail in just a moment or two. But since it's really your brainchild, I'd like to first hear some of the Anthony Bellotti story. So,
absolutely.
Where did you grow up, and what sort of role did animals play in your family?
Well, I can tell you, Duncan, I probably have a little bit of a different path than probably most.
Right.
But like, I'm sure like the entire audience, I certainly always liked animals. I had dogs and cats growing up. I was always taught to treat animals nicely. But sometime, I'm going to date myself now, and now rewind to the year 1995. I'm a junior in high school. I'm not a vegetarian. I'm not a PETA member. I'm none of that. I'm 17 years old, and I'm in a high school internship in between my junior and senior year of college. And I'm doing my internship in a laboratory in New York City at the time, experimenting on animals. I thought at the time I wanted to go to med school. I thought I'd get a nice letter of recommendation. So I did a high-profile student internship that summer in the belly of the beast, up to my eyeballs in blood, experimenting on pigs and other animals. But my first instinct, I saw this with shock and awe and horror. I didn't like what I saw. I remember this like it was yesterday. If this is one of the good labs, what the heck are they doing in the bad ones? Immediately horrified, And I remember saying to myself, okay, well, my life is going to take a different path now. I want to pursue a career that fights back against this problem. And here I am today. It's a little over 20 years later, and we founded this organization, as you, I think, gave a very good explanation, for the White Coat Waste Project. We tackle it from a different angle. But my genesis was, like many of yours, in that it was ethical driven at first. You know, I didn't like what I saw. When I was, I didn't know about taxes. I wasn't paying taxes. I was 17. But we do tackle the problem now from a unique and innovative angle to get to the root of it.
Yeah, I mean, and that is interesting. And it is, again, distinctive from a lot of the folks that, again, as you might imagine, we've had on this kind of show over the years talking about why they object to animal experimentation. But I'd be curious to know a little bit more about from when you were 17 and saw this kind of horrific behind-the-scenes experience of that lab to now. I mean, take me a little bit more through the arc, since it sounds like that horrified you and shaped you, and you can trace a pretty direct line from there to here. But tell me more about how you traveled that line.
You know, Duncan, it's a good question. I wasn't sure how to fight back. You know, now all of a sudden, now I'm 18, I'm a freshman in college. Now, I didn't know how to fight back. I didn't know about how to end these problems. I had no idea. Like, probably like everyone on this call, you know, just overwhelmed by the sheer magnitude. Oh, we'll never change this problem. We'll never end it. We'll never end the use of animals and all that stuff. I had no clue, but I did some exploring, some bouncing around a little bit after college. Worked in banking. I did a few different things, and then it hit me. I pursued a path in political and public affairs campaign, professional political consulting and campaign management and so forth. I went into the political realm. I went to Washington, Duncan. I didn't go work for an animal rights group. I've never spent a day in my life, to be honest with you, working on the staff of an animal group. You know, I've been behind the scenes. I've sat on boards. I've helped found other organizations. I've pro bono worked here and there, of course. But I never actually went and worked, you know, at PETA or ASPCA or Humane Society or any of them. It wasn't my path. It's a wonderful, noble path, but it wasn't for me. I thought my contribution could be something different, and I pursued a path working for folks like Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, working on very large statewide ballot initiatives, senators, congressmen in Washington, because I wanted to learn how the system worked. I wanted to learn a set of skills that I could one day use for the benefit of founding my own organization to fight back against the real heart of this problem, which is wasteful government spending on animals. And over the course of my career, sometime in the late 2000s, you know, probably sometime around 2012, 2013, I was working on a lot of campaigns at the time in D.C. on behalf of my client, working on things that touched defunding programs, government programs, controversial programs, healthcare programs. And I realized that this is a new model. Instead of arguing that we should be raising taxes and creating new programs to help animals, which is frankly the dominant model still in the animal movement, we're always lobbying for new programs to save animals. It dawned on me, based on a lot of the work I was doing as a consultant in D.C. at the time, that if we cut programs and taxes and spending that hurt animals, if we reverse the model, if we argue for defunding bad programs, not only do we get a win-win scenario where we save animals and money, it's also far more politically palatable. It's a completely revolutionary new model for the animal movement. There's nothing like it. There is now. And we got the idea. This would be a value add. White Coat was born, White Coat Waste Project. We tackle waste. We go after the heart of the problem, which is wasteful government spending that subsidizes animal testing. So there's nothing else like it. We work only on government-funded animal experiments, which just also so happened to be the biggest funder of the problem on the planet right now, the government.
Yeah, well, if you're talking efforts to the tune of $12 to $15 billion a year, which I guess is what you guys have estimated, although, again, it sounds like one of the multiple problems underneath the fundamental problem is that it's really sometimes hard to identify who's doing what and how much is being spent on a given project or experiment. But it sounds like in that range, which is a pretty staggering sum, that's what you guys have determined is being spent on these kind of experimentations every year.
I think you just nailed it. It's a couple important points. You really just got to the crux of this matter. First, the government spent government taxes, IRS money, you know, federal money, your money, my money. It's your money, Duncan. It's not somebody else's money. It's our money, literally.
Yeah.
We are the biggest spenders on animal experiments. The government will spend more than the entire private sector combined. That's a fact. We know that. That much we know. So we're not talking about big cosmetic company. We're not talking about big pharmaceutical company. We're not talking about big product testing, household products. It's a drop in the bucket. You know, cosmetic companies, they're not even testing on animals in the United States anymore. It's all government now, virtually all of it. It dwarfs it. It does spend more than the entire private sector combined. But there's a second point you made, and that is we know the floor of taxpayer. We know the floor. We don't know the ceiling. We know the minimum that they're spending. But there's a lot more that is not disclosed. They cook the books with their accounting and failures to disclose how much they're spending. Bottom line, we know they're spending about $15 billion a year, minimum. We can prove that. We have the documents. We have the data. We've done the FOIAing. We've got the numbers. But there's a lot more, especially within government campuses, agencies like the NIH, EPA, USDA, Veterans Administration, CDC, those agencies, that is not even on the books numbers. So we know the floor, probably about $15 billion. The ceiling could be as high as $20 billion or more. We don't know. There's horrible reporting requirements. There's horrible reporting on this. There's terrible failures to disclose. We think taxpayers have a right to know how their money's being spent.
So, Anthony, this makes obviously tremendous sense. And, of course, as people are hearing this and thinking about it in those terms, probably spurring a new sense of outrage. So let me ask you a couple of things about where we are now in the timeline. So when you were working for Schwarzenegger and senators and congressmen and learning the system, was it always fundamentally to arm yourself with knowledge and learning how to play the system, thinking, okay, I have never shaken what I saw in that lab, and I'm going to get back to it once I feel like I have the tools and the expertise and experience to do so effectively?
Always. I mean, we all have a lot of beliefs and opinions on many issues. I'm sure, Duncan, you know, everybody on this in the audience has, you know, beliefs about Democrat, Republican, pro-life, pro-choice, whatever. You know, pick your pro-war, anti-war. There's a lot of opinions and beliefs out there. I certainly have opinions and beliefs about many issues, but the path I pursue, and especially vis-a-vis White Coat Waste Project, we are single issue in what we focus on, and we have limited resources. We have limited time in the day, can't do everything, and we specialize only on what we do best, and we are the best at ferreting out, rooting out, smoking out the taxpayer-funded waste and defunding that on animal testing. I've worked for politicians, but my drive always was I was always a consultant, not really as an activist. And I was learning, I was trying to build myself on a career path to, once I had everything sorted out in terms of the best approach for this angle, government waste, and how to root that out for the purposes of saving animals and saving tax money on this problem.
Well, let me, in case people just may be tuning in now and joining us, let me just let folks know this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you are just tuning in, my guest is Anthony Bellotti, founder of the White Coat Waste Project, which seeks to halt federally funded animal research, largely because of concerns over the enormous sums of taxpayer money spent on animal experiments each year. If you'd like to ask Anthony a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. So as you're describing more of this, Anthony, I'm starting to get a sense that a crusader when it comes to, not activist, because you made that clear, but crusader when it comes to this, and yet are you and others still working in other capacities as consultants or other jobs, and the White Coat Waste Project is what you also do when there's time beyond the day job?
White Coat is full-time organization.
It is. Okay.
Is a full-time organization. It didn't start that way, though. I started it as a part-time hobby. I'll put this in perspective. Duncan, there was no White Coat Waste Project a few years ago, that long ago. There was no staff. There was no bank. There wasn't a bank account to put money into.
Yeah.
It was all built. This is an enormous success story because it was built from scratch, and it shows the hunger among taxpayers who want to end this senseless waste and abuse, and that this was a very innovative new approach and a very effective way of doing it, how it grew so quickly. There was no startup funding. There was no name ID of the organization. It's not, you know, we didn't have a household name. We didn't have infrastructure. We don't have a big brick-and-mortar office where everybody comes into. It started organically. I had the idea to start it, but it started because it was very interesting, a new way to get at an old problem. Caught traction, got noticed, started as a part-time hobby. I left my former job in my former life. Once some donors started getting attention of the donor community, and slowly we picked up some steam, got noticed in the press in Washington, and it blossomed into a full-time career not that long ago. It's only been since Labor Day of 2015, frankly, when the first funding round came in, and a year later, Labor Day 2016, I hired our first campaign manager to head up the public policy and advocacy division, Justin Goodman, who was formerly with PETA. He came aboard, and our first public campaign work began 7 days after the 2016 election, presidential election. 1 week after that, we held our first briefing in Congress, and it's been off to the races since then, precisely because we're really the only animal organization that has bipartisan reach now that can penetrate both the Republicans and the Democrats in Congress. It's been off to the races November.
This sounds like a very intense, zooming momentum kind of a process to get launched. And when you said earlier that you had limited resources, et cetera, I guess I wondered if it had become something where one or more of you could work full-time on it, but clearly you can't. So I get many follow-up questions, including now that you've referred to the election and the Trump administration. Not surprisingly, I have definitely some questions related to that. But let's get a caller involved as well. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Anthony Bellotti.
Yes, thank you. I don't know if Anthony already talked about the horrific details of the USDA and other government agencies' animal research, like where they would lock pigs into steam chambers to see, how it affected their appetites to be heated up past living temperature, or how they would deliberately take baby lambs and leave them in pastures to die to see how long it would take them. And I'd like Anthony, if he could, to comment on how the USDA, BLM, etc., both in eradicating native predator animals and so-called pest animals, as well as collaborating and cooperating with the animal factory farming exploitation industries at all levels, including food use of animals and medical research, that it all seems to be like a government corporate rancher consortium. Isn't it a huge animal industrial complex?
Thank you. Wonderfully put. It's crony capitalism is what it is. You nailed it so well. It's basically, you're talking about the USDA in particular here. And I think it's emblematic of the entire, what you call, intramural problem. These government, rogue government agencies, EPA, USDA, CDC, the Veterans Administration, which is a big problem right now, it's ground zero in our fight, USDA, NIH, it's what they're doing on their own campuses. This is government. This is government science. And the specifically about the USDA experiment, it really boils down to this. It's the government picking winners and losers in the marketplace. Private companies doing things to, pick, well, we're going to help you out. We're not going to help you out. You're going to get ahead. You're not going to get ahead. We're going to do experiments on your behalf to lower the price of meat, to raise the price of meat. It's not capitalism, if that's the way it's supposed to function. And it's totally picking winners and losers. The Meat Animal Research Center, everybody remembers that from a couple years ago, the New York Times, big expose on the USDA doing experiments on animals at taxpayer expense for the purposes of agriculture companies. They're not the only one out there. I mean, our team is in the process right now of FOIAing using Freedom of Information Act request to ferret out a bunch of additional animal agriculture experimentation programs. So this is animal experimentation, but it's done on behalf of agriculture interests, the meat industry, the wine industry, other ones like that, doing ridiculous experiments, like you mentioned, with pigs and hamsters and sheep. We don't believe that's the role of government. We don't think it's the government's job to pick winners and losers in the marketplace. We think if the experiments are so valuable, if they're truly valuable, life-saving, what have you, whether it's the USDA or the Veterans Administration, they need to find their own funding. They need to raise it themselves. They need to go to Wall Street or Kickstarter or hold a bake sale, whatever you want to do to raise that money. I don't care. Stop taking it from taxpayers. That's basically our position on it.
Well, to piggyback both on our caller's question and something I alluded to, as you yourself had alluded to, the 2016 election. I mean, before November 8th, when most people thought Trump had little or no prospect of winning, there was nonetheless some concern within the animal welfare community about what a Trump presidency would mean for animals of all kinds. I remember in the home stretch of the campaign, conservative-leaning columnist Kathleen Parker wrote a piece saying, in essence, that if Trump wins, the animals lose. And then, sure enough, a few months into the Trump presidency, animal welfare information and reports, including reports about animal treatment at research labs, were wiped clean from the USDA website. So within the White Coast Waste Project sphere, what does the Trump administration represent? And do you have greater concerns in that way than you did even before Trump was elected?
You know, Doug, it's a great question. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about this so-called Republican attack on animals. We disagree with that fundamentally. We think a lot of folks in the community have really been duped in terms of the way Washington works, in terms of what's going on with politics and animals. It's not a red issue. It's not a blue issue. It's a green one. It's about money. And specifically regarding the Trump, you know, with the administration, the blackout, I mean, I can tell you how that happened. I mean, that morning, it was 24 hours after our team health launch, the first bill of the year of 2017, less than 14 days after the Trump inauguration, we launched the FACT Act, which was the first transparency bill targeting government animal spending requirements and transparency requirements in Congress. 24 hours later, that morning, I mean, our policy chief, Justin, called me up, Goodson Goodman called me up, and goes, I think we got something here. The USDA databases are something going on here. This is not right. They're not there anymore. And I said, can you confirm this? He said, yeah. They're gone. I mean, this is weird. I mean, I go through these databases every day. And I said, well, leak it. Get it out to the press. So we were the first team that blew it up. But even given that those shenanigans that happened, and, you know, we agree with the first team to expose it. We called the New York Times, the AP, the Post. The thing is, we still don't see this as a partisan game. I think that's a 20th century model of looking at animals. I think it's this left versus right nonsense, this Trump versus animal. It's just not appropriate, and we don't think it's helpful, that rhetoric. We disagree with it, and I'll give you evidence of that. Earlier this week, the Politico actually announced that the second audit within 90 days was secured from the Government Accountability Office based on a report that our team released. Earlier this week, on Monday, they reported that John McCain, Rand Paul, Senator Jeff Flake, Lankford, Ron Johnson, these are Republicans who by, you know, if you look at the traditional scorecard measures that we use in the establishment movement, you know, you would think maybe they're not great for animals. But these are guys who just secured another audit of transparency failures in animal experimentation in colleges and universities at taxpayer expense. I think we need to reframe the way we look at politics and animals. We don't think it's a partisan thing. We don't think it's a red thing. We don't think it's a blue thing. We got to look. I mean, there's a lot of Republicans, the administration and so forth, who want to do the right thing on behalf of animals. But we're not looking at the full picture. You know, transparency is an animal protection issue. Government spending is an animal protection issue. Our job, White Coat, is to talk to these people. And that's what we think, and that's part of our mission.
So with that in mind then, Anthony, maybe give us an example of what the White Coast Waste Project has done on a specific project, a specific sort of experimentation where you said, okay, near as we can tell, this is involving X amount of dollars. This is, we think, ridiculous, or we just don't think that money should be spent that way just generally, and we're going to go after this one for this reason. Can you give us kind of a little blow-by-blow, a little bit about how you would target something given how sprawling the whole problem is to begin with?
Absolutely. Right now, Duncan, the real ground zero for us is with the Veterans Administration. Earlier this year, once we did all our research, you know, the Freedom of Information Act requests, following the money, going through the databases, we came upon a real pattern of problem of what they were doing to dogs at the VA. Back in November, again, 1 week after the election, we released a report in Congress called Spending to Death about the problem of the rampant problem of transparency violations and spending problem on dogs at these agencies like the VA, the USDA, EPA, NIH. We released that report. That report, we used it to drive close to 400,000 of our members to contact Congress to demand an audit. That audit was secured earlier this year. The first audit in history, American history, first one. Bipartisan representation helped drive this. Dina Titus in the House, Ken Calvert, Republican, Dina Titus, Democrat. A bipartisan delegation of many others, Republicans and Democrats. We secured the first audit in history on government spending on animal testing. That impacts things like the VA, which we're currently working on right now. You know, our team has identified four centers right now: Milwaukee, Cleveland, Los Angeles, and Richmond, Virginia. VA, government experimentation agencies, where they're experimenting on dogs, current projects. Right now, VA, we are running advertising, outdoor advertising, billboard advertising, surrounding each one of those facilities. We're targeting online ads right now into the VA itself, talking directly to VA employees, soliciting whistleblowers. They're coming forward to us every single day. We are working in Congress right now as well. We worked with Republican Vern Buchanan about a little over a month ago to help secure an investigation into one of these facilities. Earlier last week, in Los Angeles Times reported that we worked with Democrat Ted Lieu, who went on the record to say that we need to stop this program, this problem, what they're doing in the Los Angeles Veterans Administration to the dogs. So we're taking an integrated approach, following the money, research, advertising, and lobbying on all fronts, Democrats and Republicans, to audit, investigate, and eventually defund these programs.
Okay, so definitely want to follow up a little bit more on the VA campaign, and just want to quickly again say this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Anthony Bilotti, founder of the White Coat Waste Project, whose website, by the way, is whitecoatwaste.org. It's trying to brush up on a little bit of the current activity of the White Coat Waste Project. I did see some of the VA efforts. And one thing maybe you could clarify for me, and I'm sure many listening, is, for example, the Richmond VA Medical Center, there's this doctor who, I guess you guys have been sort of focusing some of your investigations and efforts on, Dr. Alex Tan. So tell us about the operating on dogs relative to this being the VA and how those connect.
Sure. For example, we noticed when we were doing our research process at Richmond, the problem of we looked at the violations on that specific doctor protocols and the experiments they were doing with these dogs. And he was exposed earlier. I mean, the Daily Caller just ran a report yesterday about that particular case, in which you have an animal experimenter who's also eligible to treat a human veteran at this clinic, a dog experiment, who, despite sloppy surgeries, botched surgeries, reckless experimentation on these dogs, you know, accidentally slicing into their lungs, bleeding out, that kind of thing, horrible, horrible stuff, who they had to ban them from experimenting on dogs, still eligible to treat veterans. That was, you know, just it's part of an ongoing problem. It's a pattern of recklessness across the VA, and it's not just isolated to Richmond. All four of those centers.
Anthony, I don't mean to interrupt. Because, again, admittedly, this was kind of late last night when I was doing my final preparations and stuff. So I thought, okay, am I not, like, sharp enough to get this or what? Because it sounds like, from what you're saying, maybe I did understand, even though it didn't, you know, it seemed kind of counterintuitive at first. So Dr. Tan, under the, Richmond VA Medical Center umbrella, was operating on dogs as well as human veterans?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, that's right. I mean, he was a dog experimenter, but he's also, as the clinic, as the reports confirmed, is also eligible, is potentially treating human veterans as well.
Is that common, uncommon? I was just so struck by that. I thought, okay, I must not quite be getting this, because this just seems inherently screwy.
We agree. I mean, that's why we helped expose this.
Yeah, but I mean, is he an anomaly, or is this like something that you've crossed those four VA areas that are currently part of your campaign? Are you finding that more than just in the case of Dr. Tan?
Well, you know, we're in the process of trying to smoke out the rest of that information. We don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what Duncan, one of the things we're doing with soliciting whistleblowers right now, serving, you know, digitally targeted ads into the each one of these VA facilities, is we're gathering these stories. There's the information. It is a lot of information we don't have yet.
Yeah.
And these stories, you know, they come to us via whistleblowers. They come from our own fact-finding. They come from our own Freedom of Information Act requests. So
yeah.
the truth is there's still a lot of stuff that's going to come out.
Right. But I guess for people who just generally are concerned about the kind of care that veterans get, I mean, this seems like a disturbing glimpse into what kind of doctors are operating within that system. Just seems, again, I guess I'm repeating myself, but it just seems so odd that somebody would be bouncing from experimenting or cutting or doing something to a dog to then an hour later treating a vet.
That's exactly, I mean, it disturbed us as well. But you have to understand, Duncan, there's this entire movement right now. Strange Bedfellows, Concerned Veterans, different organizations who have been repeatedly calling out VA accountability failures across the board, sloppy services and so forth. You know, we see this as part of that movement, you know, whether it's sloppy treatment of animals. We do see that as a pattern across the board with the VA.
And so is it the sloppy treatment, then back to sort of our overall thesis here, that then accounts for sloppy spending, and therefore there's another increasingly specific example of the wasteful spending that is, I think, the chief focus of the White Coast Waste Project?
It is. And it's just yet another blow against the system we've got that we're looking at here in Washington. I mean, the wasteful spending is really the root of this problem.
Yeah.
Again, we have to look at the scope of what animal experimentation is today in the United States. I mean, it is funded. We believe it's wasteful government spending that is fueling virtually all of this. And every one of these little isolated stories, not isolated, excuse me, every one of these anecdotal stories about, you know, sloppy surgeries at one VA clinic, I mean, it's a pattern we're seeing across the board. And
yeah,
it's fueled by tax money. You know, we don't believe that if this stuff is so valuable, if it's truly saving lives, why are we putting it in the hands of agencies that can't even get food in the bowls, can't do the surgeries right on the dogs? A pattern of gross waste, fraud, negligence, and incompetence. Not the proper avenue for this stuff if it's truly valuable.
So in the way that you described earlier about the White Coat Waste Project flipping the model of organizations that have animal and animal welfare concerns, so is it just the more that you're exposing these things and conducting these campaigns, is the idea that those monies then won't be apportioned in those directions, and that's going to start to be where we won't see that kind of wasteful spending?
That's exactly what we're trying to do, is in terms of, you know, a lot of it has to do with ginning up a storm in Capitol Hill. I mean, you have to understand, it's Congress that can directly control these agency budgets. It has to be a congressional play. In order to cut, if you want to save lives, we know we got to cut the wasteful spending, but to cut the wasteful spending, it has to come back to members of Congress. Congress appropriates the money for the Veterans Administration. Congress appropriates the money for the USDA that the earlier gentleman was talking about regarding those, you know, senseless winners and losers experiment. Congress appropriates that money. If we're not generating pressure on Congress, we're not going to stop the wasteful animal experiment. It's that simple.
So that's really ultimately what the focus of the White Coat Waste Project effort is let's keep bringing attention to this and keep putting the heat on them so those monies go in other directions.
And turning out our members and the audience to go to contact Congress and make their voice heard about this, about how their money is being spent. You know, everyone on the call today should go to prisonersofwaste.org, prisonersofwaste.org, the name of our campaign on the Veterans Administration issues today, and they should contact a member of Congress and let them know, I don't want my money spent on this. You know, you can say if you want it preferred to be spent somewhere else, but frankly, it's your money. You're being forced to subsidize these experiments, whether you like it or not.
And I guess while we're at it, we should also say that the organization's website itself is whitecoatwaste.org, and tremendous resources there. And so, Anthony, then, if it's a larger campaign, then do you guys typically create a website specifically for that while maintaining the mothership, as it were?
Mm-hmm. basically, yeah, so Duncan, the example of the prisonersofwaste.org URL is simply the page, the petition page, where folks can send their message to their respective member of Congress. And then, obviously, the whitecoatwaste.org is the overall website for the organization, a growing site for our resources. But to make your voice heard on the VA dog, prisonersofwaste.org.
And just in the last moment or so here, Anthony, but you mentioned the Daily Caller reporting on this VA thing, and I noticed that they refer to the White Coat Waste Project as an animal rights group. How does that square with how you see the organization at this point?
Well, we don't use that label, quote, animal rights, for the organization itself. We describe ourselves as the taxpayer watchdog, our wheelhouse is animals. Our logo, if you look at it, is very clear. It's Stop Taxpayer-Funded Animal Experiment. That's our mission. But that is a taxpayer issue, too. And that's part of the new model we think we're creating here. There's multiple ways to look at this. So we are a taxpayer watchdog. We do work on animal experiments. And it's really the hybrid of the two.
Yeah, you know, I was just struck by that because I thought even before you said what you said in our conversation today, that really isn't what you've sought to do or how you've sought to present yourself, but I could also see with given the focus of your efforts how occasionally be labeled that mm-hmm. way. Cool. Well, Anthony, we haven't reached the end of our time, but I really appreciate you taking the time to fill us in. This has been Anthony Bellotti from the White Coat Waste Project. Again, the basic website is whitecoatwaste.org, and if you're interested and appalled, as I think anybody listening would be, about what's been going on with the whole VA world and their campaigns against that, that's prisonersofwaste.org. Anthony, thank you so much for joining us on Talking Animals.
Duncan, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. In a few moments, I'll talk with Ken Koenig of Dunedin Doggy Rescue about the rescues they specialize in and some events they're hosting coming up soon. Right now, it's time to step into the Comedy Corner with a piece from Dana Gould, in my book, one of the all-time greats in stand-up comedy. Here's Dana with a piece called Snakes and Alligators in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
This is absolutely true. It happened about 3 weeks ago in North Carolina. They had the big hurricane. There's a woman in her house. Her house is filling up with water. But she can't go outside to get help because the water outside the house was filled with snakes and alligators. Now, I'm not here to judge anybody. But if you're going to drown in your own home because the water outside is filled with snakes and alligators, you did something. Life is not that cruel. I'm sure the National Guard helicopter, go outside and we'll lower a ladder. I can't, the water is filled with snakes and alligators. Jeez, lady, what did you do? By the way, why are there alligators? Like, I understand that God made sunsets and rainbows. Do we really need a gorilla made of leather that lives in the swamp and wants you dead? But did he come up with a shark and think, oh, it can't chase you across a golf course. Hang on, I got another idea. Then he came up with a crocodile for the sole reason that you could be thinking you're eaten by an alligator and be wrong. You know it's a bad idea? Because it lives in the swamp. Alligators, crocodiles, what's a snake but a rope that hates you? Put it in the swamp. Just put it in the swamp. The swamp is God's porn drawer. All the creepy stuff, put it in the swamp, cover it with a t-shirt. I'll deal with it later. Don't worry about it.
That was Dana Gould with a piece called Snakes and Alligators, taken from an appearance on Conan. Now on to my conversation with Ken Koenig of Dunedin Doggy Rescue. Indeed, let's welcome Ken Koenig to Talking Animals. Good morning, Ken.
Hey, Duncan. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Thanks for joining us. So first, let's start with maybe giving us the nickel tour of Dunedin Doggy Rescue. How would you describe what it is and what it does?
We're coming up on our 11th year. We're a 501c3. We're a network of fosters, so we don't have a base kennel. We rescue dogs on their last days from shelters from rural areas, as well as our local animal controls and shelters. And we're coming up on about 600 dogs saved. We rescue all different breeds, anything from small to large. And we mostly present our dogs at events where we get them adopted. They're also on Pet Finder as well.
And so, Ken, what is the criteria? First of all, how wide a net do you cast when you say you're pulling these dogs out of, could be sort of dire situations, and then fostering and obviously trying to adopt them out directly from your own operation? How far geographically would that extend?
Generally pretty far. It really depends on which local shelter in a rural area has civic participation, where they have somebody who takes pictures, sends them to the rescues, they help out with the transport. So anywhere from Tavares to Chiefland to Sebring, and again to Pinellas and Hernando.
I see. And then is it sort of like almost in a triage situation? If a dog's a day or two away from being scheduled to be euthanized, do you just say, okay, well, we got to grab that one right now, and then we'll help the other one when we behind that as we can? Is that it?
Yeah, I wish we were only presented with one, and that was the situation, but usually it's about 10 pitchers, and we can only save one, so we find out what foster, you know, do we have a big dog foster, small dog foster, senior dog foster, that kind of thing, and that's how we decide which one to pick.
I see. And so what is the network of fosters currently that you have?
We probably have, we're very small. We probably have about 10 fosters mm-hmm. who at any time can foster, or they're busy with their own life. And they're located anywhere from Pasco to Hillsborough to Pinellas counties.
And I guess before we proceed with any other part of the conversation, we should mention that I guess if people were interested in joining that foster network of Dunedin Doggy Rescue, the best website is dunedindogs.com. Is that?
Yeah, if you just Google Dunedin Dogs, and it'll come up for our Facebook and our website. Like most small rescues, most of the up-to-date stuff is going to be on our Facebook.
Yeah, right. Okay, so you can also search Dunedin Doggy Rescue on Facebook and get right to it. What I noticed, there's a handful of events, some you just had last weekend, but some others that are coming up in the coming days and weeks. To give us a sense of some of those and let people know what goes on, and maybe some other chances to adopt some dogs and have some fun too.
Okay, in May we got three more events, and those are all dog-friendly events. The first one is the Sunset Music Series at Weaver Park in Dunedin. That's on Friday, May 26th at 5:30, and we'll have adoptable dogs there. And you can bring your dogs, picnic basket, cooler chairs. Next one after that is the Hummingbirds playing at Crooked Thumb Brewery on Saturday, May 27th, 7 to 10, and we'll have adoptable dogs and raffles. Probably should have mentioned that we fund most of the rescue through beer, wine, music raffles, that kind of stuff. So that's why coming to these events, support is important to us.
And it's fun. We should also mention there's music, there's adoptable dogs, there's food, there's dancing. I mean, you got the whole deal.
And most of these are kid-friendly. So, yeah. Crooked Thumb, very kid-friendly.
Nice.
And the last one of May is a DDAR adoption party. We put all of our adoptions on. We gather them all up and do them at one time every month or every other month, and that'll be a Crooked Thumb Sunday, May 28th, 5 to 7. And we'll also have the adoptable dogs there. Then in June, we have two just raffle events, so they're not doggy events. First one is Beer, Bacon, and Fireworks at the Blue Jay Stadium in Dunedin. That's Friday, June 9th at 5:30. And they'll have about 15 local breweries serving the beer, and then you watch a game, and then then they have a big fireworks show. And then the last event in June is at Cafe Cajun Cafe on the Bayou. It's their 2017 annual Sour Beer Fest. That's Saturday, June 17th, 2 to 6. And we put a gigantic raffle on for that, and that's a big funder for the rescue. And then we have one in July, the Dunedin Orange Festival, coming up at Saturday, July 8th at Edgewater Park. And we'll have adoptables, raffles. They'll have about five bands playing and everything having to do with oranges, because Dunedin's history is steeped in orange production.
Well, it sure sounds like there's a lot of fun to be had. It sounds like it's either mostly music or in some cases, you know, baseball or fireworks or some combination thereof. So it sounds like there's, in addition to having a chance to meet and hopefully adopt some cool new dogs for your family, there's fun to be had elsewhere.
We seem to do better at events where there's another thing about other than just the dogs.
Sure.
You know, people don't always go to a Adopt-a-Dog Day. They just kind of have to stumble into it. And
yeah.
I was at this other event, and I saw this dog, and that's how it happened.
Yeah, serendipitous at that point. Yep. Then. Yeah. Again, it's DunedinDogs.com, and Ken from Dunedin Doggy Rescue. And so good luck, Ken, with all these events and finding more homes for various dog friends. It's a summer in desperate need at the 11th hour there. So
yep.
Thanks again for all your great work and joining us today on Talking Animals.
Okay, thanks for getting the word out for those who don't have voices.
Absolutely, thank you.
Okay, bye.
All right, take care, Ken. I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals. Coming up at 11 on WNF, it's Rob Loy and Radioactivity, kicking off a three-hour block of interviews, phone calls, news, and more, including in the noon hour, Everyday Ethics, hosted by Craig Kopp. Midpoint with Nola Lale. Then at 1 p.m., Craig Kopp returns to preside over executive session. Meanwhile, on this show, as the prize for Name That Animal Tune, I'll be offering a Talking Animals t-shirt. And that is indeed a giveaway. Please only participate if you haven't won something from WNF in the last 90 days. And this indeed will be a Talking Animals t-shirt at stake. So the first person that calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song. It's the legendary band that blazed through Florida recently and played this song. It's named an animal tune on Talking Animals. Can you name that animal tune? Maybe you can. Either way, we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Again, Rob Loy is up next with what amounts to another edition of Radioactivity in mere moments. I'll be back next Wednesday, May 24th, and my guest will be Dr. Kevin Fitzgerald, the veterinarian many may know from his long run in Animal Planet's Emergency Vets, as well as the more recent series, E-Vet Interns. He's also a veteran stand-up comedian, and many years ago worked security for such music acts as The Who, Willie Nelson, and The Rolling Stones. So this guy has many interesting and colorful things to say. Please visit TalkingAnimals.net for audio archives of every show we've ever broadcast. iTunes podcasts are available there, too. There are also links to our Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. Please like us on Facebook, the show, and or me personally, and follow me on Twitter. And also subscribe to our e-newsletter to find out about our guests a couple of days beforehand and other news from the Talking Animals world. And again, this is at the top of the show, on the Talking Animals Facebook page and my personal page, just before I went on the air, I did put a link to the Talking Animals tip jar. Give us $50, $20, whatever you can spend, $100. Give us a head start on the summer fun drive coming up in 2 weeks. Really, really appreciate it. We've got a long way to go in a short time on that one, so be really helpful. Thanks. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. This is Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weekiwachee, and beyond. Community conscious radio, homegrown, handpicked music and news. Thanks for listening. Speak again next Wednesday at 10 a.m. on Talking Animals. Thanks.